What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative, Auction Talk Edition number 3. We are flying through the auction hemisphere and landing right here today. I love looking back on auctions, looking forward on auctions, talking about the cards, products, sports, everything in between. My co-pilot, my man Nick, at The War Sports Cards, is joining me again today, and we go Broadway and then some. I've gotten some feedback. You're enjoying the long conversations. Strap in. Here's one today. We got a lot going on and a lot to ground to cover. If you are looking for someone to satisfy your consignment needs, hit my man Nick up at The War Sports Cards. Use promo code STACKING50, $50 off your first consignment. All of that is in the show notes. If you're looking for this episode in video form, because we point to a bunch of things and more exclusive content, check out my Patreon group. I'd love to have you. All right, you ready for this? Let's sit back, relax, and kick it to the conversation. All right, auction talk number 3. Nick, we're back. It's crazy. It feels like we were just here, but here we are again. Time flies when you're having fun. I know, like, we prep ahead of this and we've got a lot to talk about, but does it feel that way to you? Does it feel like we were just here, or does it feel like it's been a while? What do you think?
No, it does feel like we're just here, but when you're like us, man, and you have two little kids, you know, dictating your day to day, like, stuff can go pretty fast. My kids were sick all week last week, so it was like I never knew what day it was, and then, you know, before I knew it, here comes Monday.
Yeah, it comes fast. Yeah, the kids, and maybe it's because we record this on like Monday, and it's now. I felt bad. I was like telling my wife today. Her job's like super stressful right now. I was just like, yeah, actually, like, it's weird because like Mondays are like my favorite day now, and it's not, it's just because I'm out of the weekend grind a little bit, and I get to talk cards, specifically what happened in the world of auctions and what's going to take place. And I don't know about you, man, but like, I didn't realize how much of a like a lightning rod talking about cards at auction was going to be. But like, I get regular feedback on my content, which I'm very fortunate of, and appreciate everyone out there who reaches out and tells me how they feel about what I'm creating. But dude, I like there are so many opinions about cards, especially when they're up for auction, when you're talking prices, when you're talking segments, like the flood of feedback just regarding like the platforms we're talking about, the cards we're talking about, like the segments of the markets we're talking about, like it's been like nonstop, which I think is really fun, and it like gives me validation that this is something that people are enjoying enough to offer feedback, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, man, I love it. It's I think there's a, you know, it's resonating with people. It's striking a chord of interest, whether they agree with what we're saying or not, or they even care about the cards we're talking about. Like, people have opinions on these different players, these different sets, the results of the auctions, the whys, all that kind of stuff. And we're not sitting here saying like our opinions are right. They're just our opinions, but it's fun conversation. And I love to hear other people's opinions, whether they're the same as ours or not. So it keeps me juiced for sure. But Mondays were already my favorite days because, you know, my consignments on PWCC would end Sunday. So waking up to sold prices and all that was always fun. But now that we're recording this on Mondays, I was up at 4:30 this morning, just like ready to roll. So I'm juiced, man.
All right, well, let's go. And for anyone who's tuning into Auction Talk for the first time, we cover a little bit of housekeeping and cut ground. We do a look back up top. We hit no recent comps and share some perspective there. And then we get into some cards that we are catching our eye, and then some cards that people are sending Nick, and we're in and out. And I say that like this is going to be 15 minutes, but it's not going to be 15 minutes. If you like long conversations, this is the one for you. All right, let's jump into, we talked about, I have to like rewind my brain a little bit, but we talked about 3 cards from last time that were cards that were being, you know, consigned through you. What do you have to share about those cards? How did they do? Any perspective there?
Yeah, I'll do a quick recap here. So we had the 03 LeBron SPX patch auto out of 750. It was a BGS 9. It sold for $5,760, which was right in line. The last sale on eBay was $5,700, so right in line with that sale. One thing I want to point out on that, though, like that consigner is a member of our No Recent Comps online community, so he got 95% of the payout on that card. So he ended up with $5,472 on that sale. That $5,700 sale on eBay, even if that person is a top rated seller, has an eBay store, all that good stuff, the most they would have got on that is 92%, which is like $5,200. So extra $250 in our guy's pocket just for being a part of that group. So when I say we pay out as strong as we can, like I'm being literal with that. So just wanted to point that out. The Ja Morant, it was the 2019 Prism Signatures, the Blue Shimmer, BGS 9.5. That one sold for $1,290, which the last sale on that was in January, and it was only $738 for a BGS 9.5. So nothing has happened since then. Ja hasn't played any games since then. He's been hurt. I believe that January sale was probably pretty close to when he got hurt. So maybe that was, you know, with the freshness of that injury, I'm sure that impacted the value there. But very pleased with that sale. And then the 07 Kobe and George Gervin dual patch auto BGS 9.5, cool card, sold for $2,370. The last time that card sold was that exact copy last April for $2,160. So after fees, seller came out with about $40. So not bad to break even or even make a few bucks in this climate, holding the card for a year. So overall, I thought the sales were in line or better. But that Ja sale really stuck out to me. And just to be transparent, we're recording this on a Monday, which is the auctions just ended last night. None of these have been paid for, so I want to make that clear. If we'll assume they get paid for, if they don't, I'll point it out, because I don't want people left in the dark on a big jump like that, thinking, you know, automatically thinking it got paid for when, you know, buyers get 5 days. So we'll see. But if it sticks, that's a big sale, and it's interesting to see a card like that jump like that without him playing at all.
So I think, like, when I think about a player like Ja Morant and the just roller coaster ride he's been through over the last, you know, year or so, and I think I try to like map that to the card market and people buying, selling, trading cards. I think there's this element that I always think about, is that there's like these players that are currency at shows and online. And Ja Morant has been one of those players for so long, since he's been in the league. I mean, like, when I think about getting back into the hobby, you have Zion Williamson and you have Ja Morant, like two big names. And the, like, I don't know, the more I think about a player being away for a while or an extended period, I try to think about the interest in what collectors or what people do or don't do with his cards. And my perspective is that they're that one group of people who are going up to a table at a show, buying a card, then taking that card and going to another table and trying to make, you know, $100 profit off of it, which there's nothing wrong with that. But like, my perception is like their ability to do that with a Ja Morant card in this climate is probably lower than normal, just based on him playing or not. Whereas you have collectors too. You've got people who actually collect Ja Morant, who are Grizzlies fans, who've been following them their whole career, and they need certain cards, and they feel like now, because he's out of the limelight, now might be a good time to buy the cards. I don't know the dynamics of who bought this card or the bidding back and forth, but it's just like the way I feel, without any data or thing backed by it, is that this was a time where potentially two people who were collectors of Ja Morant were interested in getting this card. And because there were two people at that moment who wanted to do that, maybe that's why the card got elevated a little bit. That's just me speculating, but I always find it interesting to look at the people who are buying when it's not the most popular time.
Yeah, I think that's great points. And like you said, it only takes two people to bid a card up, right? Like, I mean, if two people really wanted that card and were going to pay whatever it took to get it, like, that's why you saw it go for, you know, 75% higher than the last time. I think that, you know, I do think that the freshness of the injury, you know, for that last sale being in January and that injury happening pretty close to that, like, naturally people are going to be down, like, right after that injury. I look at myself. I'm a Michael Porter Jr. fan. He's had, you know, his fair share of injuries early in his career. And when he hurt his back again 2 seasons ago, like 9 games in, I mean, I wasn't buying him. Like, I was just like, man, what's next? I don't know. Like, and with Ja, it's similar. Like, this is an injury, and the last time it was the gun situation, but it's 2 consecutive things, you know, pretty close to each other that are going to cause him to miss a big stretch of games where people probably right when that injury happened, a lot of people were like, I need to wait and see what's going to happen. And now that we're 2 months later, maybe some of those people's faith is a little bit higher in him, and they might have some high hopes for him next season. Or like you said, they might just be collectors that needed that card at that time and had the money to spend and were going to do what they needed to do to get it. So it is always interesting to try to figure out who was bidding on it, why they were bidding on it, and why they bid what they bid on it. So that's why it would be awesome to just always know who ended up with the cards. But it's also cool not knowing. Like, I kind of appreciate just wondering where that card went.
I wasn't expecting to be here in March with the Grizzlies completely out of the picture to be sitting here talking about Ja Morant cards. But maybe before we leave this topic, I think it's interesting where you've got with a player like Morant, where you mentioned 2 consecutive things, certainly like risk in spending $1,000 on one of his cards. But there's the other side where we've all seen what a healthy Ja Morant can do on the floor. And it's pretty special what he's done to the group with that Grizzlies franchise. And just like when you think about the era we're in of just player first NBA, exciting players who do all the things that are going to get kids to want their jerseys. I always use that as a barometer stick. Like Ja Morant's like outside of the injuries and outside of the pitfalls, he's about as exciting as it gets. So I don't know, like in your world, do you see that a lot of like someone coming in and either selling into it or buying cards of a player and trying to balance that, like that, finding that healthy balance of like, yeah, there's risk associated with this, but man, have you seen this guy play? Like, I can see him like getting an MVP eventually in his career, or maybe even winning a championship. Like, are those sorts of conversations that like you have on a regular basis, just talking to people about cards they're bringing in or not?
Always. And that's why I still have faith in the card market. It's, I get to see a side that most people don't get to see. Most people look at the Ja situation and they're going to say like, see what happens. This guy's too risky. Like this happens. He got injured. He did this stuff with guns. Like he's unpredictable. His prices are going down. Everybody's selling his cards. But on the other side that people don't see is there's just as many people coming in that now want to buy his cards that didn't want to buy them before. And that's why cards don't go to zero, most of them, right? They don't go to zero because there's always somebody interested in that player at a certain price point, wherever the time frame is for that, you know, that certain player and that certain card. There's going to be interest. So right now there's people interested in Ja. It might not be the same people that were interested, you know, when that card was $3,000, but there's obviously interest enough for these people to spend 4 figures on this card. So I have those conversations every single day, like people buying the cards that everybody's selling. And then, you know, a bunch of people selling the same cards.
No doubt. One of the topics I've been waiting to get to, and I feel like now is a good time to get to it, is just like wrestling cards in general up for auction. And I think anyone who's listening to this who are in the ultra high-end wrestling card game, whether you buy or you sell, you've probably been impacted with some degenerate activity over the last several months. And I've talked about just, you know, individuals creating fake accounts on eBay and shill bidding up cards and not paying for it. And then you're leaving like the person buying the card, the person selling the card or trying to buy the card, leaving everyone in a terrible position. And I will say this, like I've been so fed up with it that I have like connected in, and I will say like eBay is like trying to solve this problem, which I think is a good thing. But like for me in the interim, I have decided to like, I don't want to sell my cards on eBay because there's someone out there ruining a bunch of auctions. And it sucks because I've sold so many cards on eBay and I really enjoy it. So I, the alternative for me is like sending my cards, you know, to Nick. And so to me last night, there was like a whole nother world unlocked for me because when I set my cards, I didn't like, there was no planning and figuring out, okay, here are all the wrestling cards ending in the weekly auction at 112 weekly auction last night. But like when I did the filter on Combat Sports, I was like, holy shit. Like this is the best collection of wrestling cards ending in one night from the ultra modern space that I've ever seen. You had like, you know, a Prism Gold, Rock, PSA 8 from 22 Prism. And last night, you had a Gold Shimmer out of 3 from 22 Prism. You had 22 Trish Stratus Black Prism, Edge Black Prism, Stone Cold Auto Black Prism out of 22. I had a bunch of cards there. There was just a bunch of cards. And it was fun because it was like, man, look at all of these cards performing so well all in one place. And also it's like WrestleMania season. So I just like wanted to call that out, like because I think the wrestling card community, as someone who's in it deep, has been so fixated on the idea that there's only like one place to buy, sell, or buy and sell your cards. But I don't know. To me, like last night was validation that there's like a lot of different places to do that. And I just think it's cool that a niche like wrestling cards is like cards are selling for what they're selling and there's attention and there's focus on it. Now, because it's almost like there's other people coming in to pay attention on it. So I don't know. I just needed to go on a little rant there because I'm like, I'm just excited. Although a shitty situation that I know is going to eventually get resolved that could like destroy an entire market and community. I'm just excited that in the interim, there's like good places where cards can be sold and I don't have to worry about it.
No, I'm pumped for it too. And you actually brought that whole, you know, shilling wrestling cards eBay situation to my attention when you first consigned your batch of wrestling cards, you know, a month or two ago with us at PWCC. So I didn't even know what was going on as somebody that's not a wrestling collector, not really following that market regularly. So it was news to me. So I was kind of nervous when you sent that first batch in. I'm like, I hope that doesn't happen here. PWCC does take extra measurements to make it harder to show cards. It's still not impossible. Like until a platform has an auto pay feature on auctions, like anybody can just not pay for a card, right? But it's, you have to go through more steps to create an account on PWCC. And then when you don't pay for a card, like your everything attached to your account gets banned permanently. So like creating a new account, it's just a lot more effort and work. It's so much easier to do on eBay. And I do agree and believe that eBay is doing stuff to take care of that. It's just going to take time to do it. And that'll be better for everybody. But one thing that you brought up that I thought was super interesting is you didn't look at what was scheduled in the weekly 112. But then you noticed that there was a bunch of good wrestling and combat cards in that auction. And that's another conversation I have a lot. A lot of people worry about their cards competing with other big cards within their category. Like we'll use wrestling as an example here. Like a lot of times people, if they're sending in a big wrestling card or a few, they won't want to compete with the other big wrestling cards, even if it's different athletes or years or sets. But I'm a firm believer, and I think last night's auction proved it again, that you want your cards going with other big cards. As long as it's not the same card, right? We don't want two John Cena Prisms from the same year going at the same time. That's not ideal. But if, you know, a John Cena Gold Prism running with a Rock Gold Prism and a Stone Cold Galactic, like big name, big cards, you know, can be the same set but different parallels. Like they actually grab bidders from each other because they're seeing those cards in front of their face during extended bidding. They're seeing them when they're looking for their own cards. They're seeing them when they're looking for other cards. So I guarantee that's what happened last night because the results were very strong last night. You said you were pretty pumped about your results. And most of yours were, I think all of yours were under 1,000, if I'm not mistaken. So they were all, you know, a couple hundred dollars up to $900, affordable cards. But, you know, just a lot of attention on that combat section in the weekly auction, I think drove a lot of those prices.
Rising tide lifts all boats, as they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I've been talking a lot about like reactive versus proactive buying, and like the idea of going out, knowing what cards you want, building a list, researching, using your network on the proactive side. And then there's a reactive side where you look at a safe search or you look at an auction and you notice a card that you didn't know about, and then all of a sudden you're interested in it. And I think based on what you just described, it's like if people can go to a place and see a bunch of cards that are adjacent to what they collect, the odds of them maybe putting in a bid or two probably go up a little bit. So that was fun to see last night. I was like a total degen. My wife was in bed. I had my phone. Like I was like falling asleep. A couple of my cards were like in extended bidding, and I was like, I don't know. I can just wait and see this in the morning, but like I don't know. I just had to stay up and see the action.
That's me, dude. So my littlest, who's like 1.5 years, like usually sleeps on me at night, or at least the beginning of the night. So a lot of times, I'll be in the recliner or in the bed, like trying to keep the baby asleep, like watching the auctions, and she always wakes up like at the best moment, where I can put my phone down for a minute and feel like I missed something. But yeah, and I always feel like a little kid in those moments. But it is what it is. It's the excitement of it.
It is. We're gonna hit the sports topic, but before we do, like one of the pieces of feedback that I got this week, which was good feedback, like I love it. Like it allows me to like get centered a little bit and think about like areas in the market that Auction Talk is or isn't addressing. And one of the pieces of feedback I got was about like, hey, can you like spend some time maybe and focus in on some cards that are, lower dollar, because not every, like there are different segments, different categories, and maybe not everyone focuses in on like the $1,000 to $500 category. Maybe people are going lower. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's really good feedback. I definitely want to like be mindful of spending some time trying to talk about some cards that maybe fall into the couple $100 range. As I've gone through this exercise, it's there. You just got to look and think about things differently, because my mindset is like, well, things are rare and scarce, and rare and scarce things are more interesting, and inevitably rare and scarce things that are more interesting are going to cost higher dollar value. When I don't know, you just kind of got to take a few steps back and be like, well, that situation doesn't apply to everything. And there's like a lot of really cool cards that don't go for thousands of dollars. So I wanted to call that out and just say, who sent the feedback, appreciate it. And want to be mindful, especially as we're calling. I have heard this. We are calling this Auction Talk, so we don't want to be like one lane and focus. Like the more broader I think we can get and capture more areas, the better off. But I wanted to bring that up to you. I know you deal with cards from a lot of different segments, but just as I talk through that, kind of what goes on in your head.
I love the feedback. I really appreciate it. And I'm somebody that's always, I always say I don't have an ego, right? Like I want to know what people want and I want to deliver that to them. It's not about me. Like I'm providing the service. So I need to know what the people, interested in the service want, whether it's this podcast or consignments or whatever. So I love any and all feedback. And I love hearing that, because as somebody that's a business owner in this space, a content creator, right? Like I wear all the hats in this business. So, sometimes you wonder when you're putting out content, like if you're putting out content on a $150 card that you think is cool and it's rare, is it gonna resonate with people? Because that's not what you see from the big auction houses, right? They're talking about all of their biggest cards because it's, they get the most bang for their buck when they do that, right? They're going for eyeballs, right? But I'm also a firm believer that number of eyeballs is not necessarily a direct correlation with impact, right? Or success. And what kind of customer person do you want to, engage with? And that person buying the $150 card that they think is awesome, is for their collection. It's a player and card that they don't see everywhere, but they really want it. Like, those are the people we're trying to reach a lot of the time. So it's good to hear that. It's refreshing. And there's going to be plenty of other people are going to cover all those big sales, right? Like I'm happy to be different and not not always touch on those. It's fun to touch on those sometimes, right? Like when that Luka sold and then comparing it to the Mahomes the next week, that's fun. And it has a trickle down to other parts of the hobby, but you know, I'm happy to keep, you know, a good chunk of the content on those more affordable cards that are still rare and desirable.
I was listening to the crossover this morning and there was the winner of the Mahomes was in the crossover chat and was asking Chris and Josh to comment on the difference in the Luka and the Mahomes sale. And I just wanted to be like, as I'm listening to it after the fact, I'm just want to be like, go listen to Auction Talk. We covered it already.
I didn't get to listen to the crossover yet. I'll probably listen to it today or tomorrow, but I'm curious what their takes were, if they were like way different than ours or pretty similar. What were they saying?
The stress on the global impact of basketball was definitely there and probably tapped into maybe a little more aggressively than me even, but like that makes sense because those guys spend way more time in the basketball portion of it. So they understand the makeup of that market more than I do, but yeah, always a good listen. But yeah, I think it's funny to see topics bleed over across different content streams, which validates to me that like, it's something that, you know, people want to talk about, which is fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll have to go listen to that episode.
Okay, so let's talk sports. We always want to make sure there's a lot going on in the world of sports. And I will say this, because I looked at your topic and what you want to talk about, and I'll just say this. To me, as I'm recording this, and I'm an Indianapolis Colts freak, today's been a good day for me. I love free agency. This time is so fun where you've got baseball spring training, you've got free agency in basketball, the NCAA men's and women's tournaments, you got basketball playoffs kicking into high gear, you've got the Masters right around the corner. Like, this is like a sneaky underrated time. My attention, especially this week, will certainly be on NFL free agency, and I know you want to talk about one of those, which I think will impact cards certainly, and this will be good. But I just want to say, as a Colts fan, today, let's go Colts fans out there. We extended, unexpectedly, Zaire Franklin, who's been one of our best defenders, and we locked in Michael Pittman Jr. for 3 years. He's getting paid $71.5 million. He's the MVP of the team last year. He's been a beast for us. So I'm already like, I'm a big believer in like, you got to build, don't buy. And I just always like to see my team doing whatever it can to retain its best players and not letting those guys hit the open market.
Yeah. I feel like the Colts have been good at that for a while. You know, as somebody that's, you know, doesn't follow them super closely, like I don't hear about them making, you know, huge splash, dollar figure signings in the off season. And then that player fizzles out and they have to release him 2 years later. And, you know, like as a Washington Redskins and Commanders fan, like that's what I'm used to, right? Like we usually make this the highlight of our year is the free agency, right? We spend way too much money on an old guy that doesn't have much left in the tank. And then he just fizzles out quickly with us. But with the new ownership, new GM, like new head coach,
quarterback,
new quarterback about to be drafted here shortly. Like there's a lot of renewed optimism in Washington, and we haven't made any of those splash signings, which is exciting. Like I'm pumped about that. It seems like they're being deliberate and patient with their choices, with their options, and kind of measuring things out and taking their time, which I love. But I mean, this is my favorite time of year as well, because our season's usually over in, you know, early November. So I look forward to March and April every year, and excited to see what Washington does in free agency and the draft. But I mean, the big one is like, let's just get into it. Russell Wilson just signed a 1 year vet minimum deal?
Yep. He's getting paid by the Broncos. So it was like 1 point nothing from the Steelers. Yeah. But yeah.
That's crazy, man. I don't know what to think about it. Like the Steelers, how were they 10-7 last year?
Yeah.
Like, how?
Tomlin, man. It's what they do.
It's like, I don't even know who played the quarterback position most for them. They had three different guys, and it seemed like they all played like five games each or something. I don't know, but the fact that team won 10 games is impressive. Russell Wilson, like, I want to talk about his legacy, but like the last few years, it seems from the outside in that he's been a lot to deal with internally for organizations. So I'm curious to see what his brand and persona, how that does, excuse me, with a guy like Tomlin, right? Who's kind of a no nonsense, like no BS type of guy. Very curious to see how those two kind of what looks like different styles and personalities come together and how that works out with the rest of the team. But I mean, we'll get into his legacy, like I said, but Russell Wilson is, I mean, he's Russell Wilson, right? He's got to be better than what they had on the roster. So I would think the ceiling is raised, but then you're in the AFC, which is such a tough conference. That division is the toughest, probably the toughest division in football. So I don't know what to think of it. I don't know if it moves the needle or not. I'm curious what you think.
Pre last Wilson injury in Seattle and the Denver days, I was so high on him as a player just because of all the things that he did to, you know, catalyze that team, that offense, you know, win a Super Bowl. I was very high on him, and then things went south a little bit in the Denver experience for a lot of different reasons that we don't necessarily need to get into. But I will say this. I think Mike Tomlin is an unbelievable Hall of Fame worthy coach. So that's good. No nonsense. You mentioned that. One thing that we need to call out is that Arthur Smith from the Falcons got fired from Atlanta, and he's the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. He was at his best in that role as offensive coordinator for Tennessee. It catapulted him into that head coaching job. And I think so many times you see these brilliant minds offensively who just aren't great head coaches but are really good offensive coordinators. And I know the Steelers, I mean, you don't need to be an NFL junkie. You could follow along, but like they were ready to be done with the Matt Canada experience like years ago, and it ended last year. So because of Mike Tomlin, I think it is a phenomenal move, especially with what they have to pay this guy. There was so much uncertainty at the quarterback position in Pittsburgh with the current roster that to me it makes so much sense. So I'm not saying it's a slam dunk home run. Like, he's got some tread on the tires. There's maybe some personality things, but if you're taking like a little bit of a risk and you're going to put your neck out there a little bit, why not do it with a guy who's been there and done that? So I'm a fan of the move.
Yeah, I would love to see it work out. I really would, because I feel like Russell's legacy, like you said, pre-Broncos, that really before that last year in Seattle was like, you know, he was on a trajectory to be one of the best of all time, especially statistically. Like, his stats are pretty outrageous. And he'll be, you know, I don't know where he is all time in yards and all that good stuff, but I know he'll be, you know, comfortably in the top 10 if he has a few years left in him. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see him kind of rebound from the Broncos experience. I would hate to see him go out the way he's had to play the last 2 years. I would hate to see that continue with the Steelers and then just kind of fizzle out of the league. Like, I hate when great players go out that way. I hate seeing that. And then I think about the card market. Like, if you believe in Russell Wilson's legacy, you should be buying the heck out of his card, or at least you should have before this news happened. I'm sure there's going to be a little, you know, resurrection spike with this, you know, going to a new team that just made the playoffs, all that. But man, if you were buying Russell Wilson in the last like 3 months and holding him for the long term, I feel like you're probably going to do well financially, because I think when we look back in 10 years at his legacy, I think he's going to be somebody that people will be interested in collecting more, or talking about more, or kind of looking into his cards more. And I remember Mahomes just after his first Super Bowl, right? He just won an MVP, just won a Super Bowl, and then lost the Super Bowl the next year. And then immediately it was, well, is he just another Russell Wilson? You know, is he just another guy that went to a couple Super Bowls early, won one, and didn't do anything the rest of his career? And obviously we've seen that not be the case, but it's interesting to see those two players' trajectories over the last few years. But yeah, it was what, 3 years ago where Russell, three or four years ago where Russell had like 35 touchdowns in the first like 8 games of the year. I mean, he was on a ridiculous pace and was an MVP favorite. I think they were 8-0 to start out, and then they just kind of fizzled out. That seemed to kind of end his career in Seattle. But I would love to see it work out for him, but I'm just curious if you're going to sell all your Kenny Pickett cards now, or are you going to hold them, or what's the plan now? Like, there's so many, like Mason Rudolph, is he just never going to get a real shot? Like, he just comes in.
He had a thing going last year.
It's like every other year it happens for him, but then he never actually gets a chance to be the starter. So I feel bad for the kid, but I'm interested to see it shake out. That's for sure.
I'm glad I'm not a six-figure buyer of Kenny Pickett or Mac Jones. We don't even need to go there. But yeah, with Russell Wilson, just maybe to close it out on his cards, like I have a very sentimental connection with his rookie year because it was Andrew Luck's rookie year. And I think about his portfolio of cards. He's got the Topps and the Panini crossover years, which I freaking adore, like that time period, because it just allows for so many different cool cards. When you can have a black finite and a super fractor of the same player in their rookie year, like, come on. Like, what more can you ask for? So I'm excited to just see what happens with his cards. And to me, like, personal preference, because I'm a Luck collector, I think there's probably, it's going to, like, even if you don't want to buy, if you're not a Russell Wilson collector, you don't want to buy him, like, it might be worth just, like, setting up a safe search on eBay to just see what cards come to market, because I promise there'll probably be some cool ones here in the next, you know, month or so.
Yeah, that's true. And I wish I would have been watching closer, you know, these last couple of months to see what big cards it is have come up lately. But I want to, you know, we can move off this now next, but I wanted to give a quick shout out to the 2012 class, the QB class. I mean, that was like one of the weirdest and best classes of all time. Like, 1-2 was Luck and RG3, right? Like,
yeah,
we don't need to get into RG3 as a Redskins fan here. My heart hurts enough as it is. But it's funny to see that Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins were the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, and 7th quarterbacks drafted in that class, and they're the only ones left.
Tannehill, don't forget Tannehill.
Is he still? That was going to be my next question.
Free agent.
Okay, so he's a free agent. So we'll see. He might. They might be the only ones left. But yeah, Tannehill was the. What was he like? He was the 8th pick, so he was the 3rd quarterback drafted. So just interesting to see how that
sneaky quarterback draft.
Sneaky quarterback class, man. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's jump over to no recent comps. You send out your weekly newsletter, hits inboxes on Saturday. Everyone should go sign up for that. Also, too, we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but I would imagine, like, if people are listening and they want to send you their cards to sell, we still got an offer on the table. Is that accurate, or am I just, like, making shit up?
No, man. For stacking 50. If your first time signing with us, if you whatever you send in, use the stacking 50 promo code. The link to submit and everything is on the website, or there's a link on my Instagram at the Wharf Sports Cards, and then the website's thewharfsportscards.com. There's a promo code section on there. Enter stacking 50, and you'll get $50 off your first consignment with us. You'll get our normal payout rates, which are on that form, you'll see them, but they're really good payout rates, some of the best you can find anywhere. We'll just send you an extra $50 whenever we pay you out is how that'll work. So definitely take advantage of that. We're going to keep that thing rolling. Again, it's for first-time consigners with us. So if you've never consigned with us, that's a great chance to try out PWCC, try out our service, ask all the questions you have, and just get a feel for, you know, what our experience is and get a discount along the way.
Okay, so let's hit on, from your newsletter this last week, maybe hit on a topic that you talked about that you think is interesting and you want to go a little deeper on.
Yeah, so this one, I want people to know, like, this is my fault, I probably don't make this clear enough, but the No Recent Comps newsletter, we don't just talk about cards at auction. Like we talk about different topics in the hobby. Like, one of people's just feedback from people, their favorite segment is what I call question on pondering. It's just something I'm thinking about in the hobby that I want to kind of just put my thoughts out there for people to hear. And something we talked about this week, which I thought was really, it was really interesting. It's sparked from a tweet that I saw about, this guy was talking about what has changed in the hobby since he got back in 12 years ago. He talked about a few things, and I just wanted to kind of reflect on what has changed in my world in the hobby since 2017 when I got back in permanently. And, you know, they were different than his, but those are in the newsletter, but that kind of led to me thinking, what do I think could happen in the near future, or whether it's a year or two, that could shake up the hobby. Like just kind of knowing what's happened, what has changed, and kind of where it feels like we're moving. What do I think could change soon? Something I think I could see. I feel like with there's so many auction houses, there's so many marketplaces, right? There's so many places to sell your cards. We all feel like there's no way all of them can survive long term, right? It doesn't feel like there's enough of a pie there to support all of them making the money they need to make long term, right? So does that mean consolidation? Does that mean we've kind of seen that a little bit? Does it mean people just exit? But I think one thing, I don't know if this would be a desperation move, but I think one thing that auction houses are probably considering or could consider is opening the door for people to list their cards directly on their platform themselves. Just like an eBay, right? Like I take a picture of my card, I get on my alt account, whatever, Golden Auctions account, whatever, and I throw up the picture, I put in the title, and I schedule the listing all myself, right? Because auction houses do all that for you. You have to send them your cards, they scan it, they title it, they list it, they do everything for you, right? So I think it's an interesting move because it cuts out a lot of overhead for one. So if you're just looking at like making more money as a company, that's one easy way to kind of change the bottom line is to cut out some overhead. Cause you're not paying people to scan, title, ship your cards. You're not paying, for extra storage for the cards to be with you. Very intriguing. It competes directly with eBay, right? eBay is the only place that does that and has an auction format. So you're competing directly with eBay, which nobody's tried their exact business model yet. So it'd be interesting to see. I'm not sure if it'll happen because it opens a door, right? There's a lot of liability risk involved in that when you don't know what, like it opens the door for fraud. It opens the door for just a lower quality experience for people. Like right now you go to PWCC, you go to Golden, everything looks the same. It's all clean. All the scans look exactly the same type of quality. You know there's systems in place for handling your cards, storing your cards, shipping your cards. You don't have to worry about, you know, does this person know how to ship a $7,000 card? So there's a trust there. But I could see it happening as a sort of desperation, like we're either going to fail and this is our last attempt. And I'm curious what would happen if they did open that door.
I like it. I think a self-service model would be interesting at any of those major auction houses. I think there's a lot in that that I don't know or don't understand that I would imagine like eBay has worked through to solidify where it's like, you know, if I never worry about because of the layers of protection that eBay has in place. I never worry about like just losing my money on anything just because they've got those like security measures in place. So as a guy who's spent his career working in software, I know like the value that goes into having like a security team that's dedicated and the procedures and all that go into that. It's a lot of stuff that'll make my eyes crossed if I sit down and look at a security document and have to like help a sales rep out with one to close a big deal. But those are things that like go on with these, like a place like eBay that we don't even think about. So I think there'd be a lot of work, but it might make sense if, you know, a company is trying to survive or a company is trying to grow. So I'm a fan of change. I'm always open to change. So I think it's an interesting thought and would be curious on if it would play out or not.
Yeah, like you said, it would definitely be more work than what appears it would be on the surface, right? It sounds like a simple change, but I can tell you from working inside of an auction house, and it's never simple to change even the littlest things. Like there's processes that you have to go through. There's measurements you have to take. Like you said, security is a big thing. Liability is a huge thing. But so there's that to consider. But I mean, really, we've never seen any of these auction houses try to directly compete with eBay's model, right? They seem to really just go back and forth with each other. You know what I mean? Like somebody starts something and then later this auction house does the same thing. And then it's just like a back and forth. And, you know, they're all kind of the same model and same structure. And it's just, who do you prefer to go with? But then eBay is just over here doing their own thing, totally different the whole time. It's funny because now eBay, you know, it's kind of tried to do the whole vault thing and kind of steal some market share from the auction houses. But I would love to see, you know, an auction house platform or any platform just really take a page from eBay's model and just see what happens. We'll see.
Yes, we don't have any information, but we're trying to
all
bring
speculation.
All speculation.
That's what this card world is, right?
Yeah, it is. Before we move on to like the segment where we talk about all the cards, want to hit on if there was any no recent comp qualified card from that you covered in the last newsletter that did anything.
Yeah, so we touched on the 97 Flair Showcase Legacy Row 0 out of 100 Frank Thomas PSA 9. So it was the I think it was the there's a PSA 10, I think one, but I don't think we've ever seen the PSA 10 sell before. So the PSA 9 is the highest copy of the card we've seen sell. It sold on last night with our guy Chris from Volume Accumulation on eBay. Sold for $2,551. And the last sale of that card in a PSA 9 was in April 2015 for $151.30. So 9 years has passed, but that's I don't know the math. That's like 18x. So pretty huge jump. That's a significant card. It's the first year legacies for baseball. Row zero is typically the most desirable row of those cards. I mean, beautiful design. We've talked about Frank Thomas and his collectability before. But yeah, awesome card, doesn't surface often and sold for much more than last sale.
This is becoming the Big Hurt podcast right
yes.
here.
Yes, I'm here for it, man.
I will say, so I'm going to plug my group real quick. I dropped an episode this morning about adjacent to this topic of every 3 years. Like, if you look at these cards, and I dig into Card Ladder, if you look at cards of important players and important parallels, and there is like a 3 year period between sales, like those the rise of those cards and those prices go up dramatically. I just did a three player. I looked at Randy Moss, Vince Carter, and Barry Bonds, and just looked at their cards and the sales history of some of their biggest cards. And it's wild when you start looking in the data. And we're looking at this card, and there's like a 9 year period, and this has started on the show. We've been talking a lot about it, but like, I am more convinced now than ever before that the most important factor on a card's value is the amount of time it's been in between sales. And so I am trying to spend more time digging into that, because every time I go down that rabbit hole, like, there's so much gold in there that I want to share out. But yeah, it's like the most fascinating topic to me. And it kind of aligns directly with the no recent comps conversation you're having, but it really matters. And I know people get so pissed about, like, who are Brady collectors seeing the same Brady cards over and over again because it was lowering in value. And I know you can't like organize, like, don't sell these cards when, but it, when you do see these cards that just are rare and scarce, there are people out there, proactive buyers that have those cards on their list, that when they see it, there's plenty of them, they're ready to go nuts. So I want to explore that topic more and more on here, but just the data really tells a fun story.
Yeah, I mean, that's what sparked this whole no recent comps movement, was I was noticing the same things. And I think there is, like you said, there's a lot of super interesting and revealing data to kind of unleash once you dig into those sales histories. And on the flip side of it, like, if you're able to identify rare cards that people wanted at one time, like let's use your Brady example, right? A bunch of the same rare cards were selling over and over in a short period of time. But if you rewind to years prior, were those cards selling less frequently and for higher prices, right? That could be an indicator that people really wanted those cards and want those cards, but we're just in a cycle of people turning things over. If you can buy in those moments, right? Like, don't let the dips scare you on the long-term, you know, value of those cards, right? The long-term projection of those cards. But the people buying those cards when they pop up frequently are the ones that are going to be making the money 3 years from now if they can sit on them and wait. So, I mean, I said it before. I think it just helps everybody when cards sell less frequently. It gives you it keeps things more mysterious and intriguing, right? Like when you see the same card surfacing over and over, like it can be a championship ticket rookie out of 100. That's a rare and desirable card. Everybody's sick of it because it sells every single month, you know? So it just kind of adds to the aura of a card when you see it less often.
100%. All right. If you have not listened to Auction Talk, this is where we get into talking about 6 cards, 3 from each of us that we think are cool. And then we close out with 5 cards that are being sold through Nick. And it's fun. We get to talk about cards. We get to talk about players. So we're going to kick things off with this card that I have on the screen. If you want to watch the video version of this, I've got it in the group. But I will describe it to the best of my abilities. And this is my exploration on trying to talk about a card maybe a little lower than in dollar value than most that we talk about here. But is the, and speaking of Brady, it's a segue into Brady. We're talking about the 2015 Panini Purple Prism Mosaic Tom Brady out of 50. It's a raw card. Ends next Sunday on PWCC. This card is out of 50. But the reason why I bring up this card is because I was like doing a Andrew Luck scan, not like a few months ago, and I stumbled across the scan of this card on eBay, and it was like maybe 15, 20 bucks. And I was like, man, that card's gorgeous. It looks like a black finite, but purple. I got the card and it came in the mail, and I was like, this thing is stunning. Like, first year they ever did it, only year they ever did it. And then immediately when I got it, I was like, I got to find a Peyton Manning. And there was a PSA 9 Manning on eBay that I bought. I can't even remember. It was for like not even 100 bucks. And I got it. And I to pair those two cards together. But I'm a Prism simp through and through. And if you're a Black Finite appreciator and you want a card that's like, it's 50 copies, so they're like available. But the aesthetics on these things are just incredible. And I was looking back on the sales history, and it's wild. Like the Brady, this card last sold in February 21 during like the boom when Brady's cards were going nuts for 300. But there was another sale in January of 21 for 131. But like this card literally, we've hit the 3-year threshold. Like this card hasn't sold in 3 years, and here it is up for auction on PWCC, and I don't know what it's going to go for, but I don't know. Like, this card is beautiful to me, and I think if you're looking for a poor man's black finite, like, here you go. What do you think about this card, Nick?
I love it, man. It's a card. I got to be honest. I didn't know much about this card until I think I saw it on, I don't know if you like reshared somebody on Instagram, or it might've been Gunther. I feel like he's always throwing out cards like this that I didn't know about, Gunther cards or whatever it is on Instagram, Brady Collector. Honestly didn't even know this card existed, cause I don't do a whole lot of modern, ultra modern, modern. And it's not a huge Brady card to where it's sold for so much that it would have, you know, come up on my radar. So that makes it more interesting to me. And I agree with the design. It does look like a black finite, a purple black finite, right? Do you know if this was a regular parallel, or was it like a special parallel, like release?
The more I dig into 2015, the more I love it, because I love the borders and just the sleek design, but obviously it's the first year of gold vinyl, and it's just, they drop this in here this year. And I get lost in the like later years of Prism when it's been over paralleled, but right. I know that this is the only one based on my last look. So it's just fascinating to me, because literally it is a black finite, but purple, like not out one of one, it's out of 50. But like, mm-hmm. if you like that appearance, which I would assume if you're a Prism fan, you probably do, like it's fun to have these. And like, there's a lot of legends in 2015. Like, there's a Montana. There's just a lot of the fun set. So, I just think aesthetically it like hits on all the elements that I like in cards.
Yeah, and 15 was the first year of the White Sparkle, so that's significant. The White Sparkle was like a Panini Rewards pack thing or something. So it was different. That's why I was curious if this one was different, but I just found it. It's on the regular checklist. So it is like a regular parallel. And I'm also super intrigued when there's just 1 year of a limited parallel. Like I think like this card, I think of like the 2011 Topps Chrome Crystal Atomic. I think that was the only year for football
yes.
of that parallel, and people love that one. There's sometimes it's like, okay, 1 year wasn't enough, so people don't know about it or care about it. And then the flip side is sometimes it's like, man, this was only limited to 1 year. It's a sick card, and people want it even more. So I'm always intrigued by that dynamic. And like, I just feel like this card, people just don't know about. If I didn't know about it, how many more people just have no clue about this card?
I know. Here's one, back to the, we'll get off this card, but you mentioned 1 year of stuff. There's 2 years of this, but again, another appearance. It looks just like the 10 and 11 Finest Mosaics, which are fan favorites amongst the community. So I think all of these influences of all of these different types of cards, they help, like, I don't know, they gave me the warm fuzzies when I saw this because it reminded me of some of those, but cool card. I don't know. I wouldn't imagine it's going to go for a lot, but who the hell knows in this game these days with the way cards are. I don't know why I'm staying in Boston. New England has given me so much pain over the years. All you Boston listeners out there and winning your championships and doing your thing. But I called out this card, which is the Larry Bird National Treasures Legacy Game Use Patch out of 49 PSA 8. I saw this card and it's on eBay. It ends in this will end the day this episode goes live. So if you listen to this card, the episode on launch day and you like this card, take a look because it's going to end tonight. But this card, like the patch on this card, is interesting. Larry's signature is gorgeous. And I don't know, I wanted to talk about this card mostly because I wanted to talk about Larry Bird and being in Indiana. And Larry Bird is definitely one of those names in the state of Indiana that, you know, transcends basketball. And I think about a player as great as Larry Bird, all-time great, and growing up and watching Larry Bird, and then Larry Bird being the coach of my team and then being such a fixture in the front office of the Pacers. I just think about his cards. And it's like, I mean, he's just a rat. Like, he started and ended his career in this era where he doesn't have a lot of these cards. That we talk about a lot, the 90s, late 90s parallels, this and that. And I think just about like football players, like, you know, Montana and Marino at some level, like some of these guys just like are all-time legends fall into this category. So then you like, if you want to collect these guys and get their best cards, then you have to go buy like these post-playing day cards with like memorabilia, autographs, this and that. And I just, that's like a thread that I just find really interesting because there's some super passionate player collectors out there who don't get to collect playing day cards because they're just not a lot out there. And to me, like for as great as of a player as Larry Bird is, like he is one of those examples. And I don't know how often we'll get to talk about Larry Bird on this podcast, but it was an opportunity to, and I just wanted to give him and his cards a shout.
Well earned, man. Larry Bird is one of the all-time greats, and I think it's an interesting thing to consider that he wasn't in any of those 90s releases. So it's like then you jump to the next era of cards and you would think those would bump up a notch just because of the lack of opportunities in the 90s space. So yeah, sick card. The patch is insane, like you said. Auto is great. Game used. Yeah, it says game used there in the title, so I'm going to assume game used. So it's a great card.
So I want to close out, and this is one I switched at the last minute. But this card, somebody in my Jason, Contrarian Card, shout out, he put this in the Patreon chat, and I looked at this thing, and I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. This card's on eBay, and it has, with 7 days left, it has 36 bids, and it's up to $9,955, and it is the 2005 UD SP Legendary Cuts dual cut 4/4 auto of Satchel Paige and Jackie Robinson. There's four copies of this card, and dude, when I looked at this, I saw it in the chat and clicked at it. Like, I didn't look at like the time left or the dollar value yet. I just looked at the card, and literally, like this, like feeling of like baseball history and sports history. Like, I was so like taken aback by seeing both of these players and what they did. I had been hearing like Satchel Paige as a part of like the vintage conversation so often. And I like, this took me over the hump to like really dig in and start learning about his career. And just, I think, you know, Jackie Robinson, like, I mean, enough can be said about his impact, but like Satchel Paige's impact, the more I got educated just on his place in baseball's history, is just outstanding. And just to see these two guys on these card, like, I don't know. To me, this is like a special freaking card. So I like made a cut and added this to the conversation just because I was like, man, these are the types of cards that I think need to be talked about. So I'm sure it'll do just fine in auction, but I thought it'd be cool to call out here.
Nice cut pun you made there at the end. It made the cut, right? There's a whole cut cult out there, man. Like, there's people that love these cut autos. Like, it's their thing. It's their obsession. And I see why. It's like you get autos of players you just wouldn't see otherwise on cards. So yeah, I think it's a very special card. And I was just quick looking up on Card Ladder. Like, I just typed in Satchel Paige cut auto, and it looks like there was only 132 sales ever of a Satchel Paige cut auto. I didn't look into like how many different years and all that kind of stuff, but that says it was 132 Satchel Paiges and 132 Jackie Robinson. So interesting that both of them had the exact same amount of cut auto sales. And
that's ridiculous.
I would imagine there's just not many across different years. Like, out of those 132 sales, I'm sure it's probably a handful of different cards, actually.
No doubt. All right, dude. This is really bizarre. I don't want to take your thunder away. You're gonna talk about this card. Actually, I want you to talk about
it.
You remember last week when I talked about Kurt Warner?
Yeah.
So
you ran into this guy half naked,
dude. I was in San Francisco. I was in San Francisco for work, and me and my boss just got done with like a 10-mile run in San Francisco, and literally the worst run. If you live in the Bay and you run those streets, you're a maniac. Like, I literally couldn't feel my legs for like 48 hours. But like, we go get the shit, we like, you know, get cleaned up, then we walk to breakfast, dude. And I swear to God, I like, it's one of those places, brunch places, with like where you share the same like type of bench. Dude, yeah. I literally look over and like Manu Ginobili is literally in San Francisco eating at the breakfast place. I look over at my boss at the time. Like, I was like, he's sitting next to me, but I can't see, but I like thought it was him. And I shit you not, like, second podcast in a row, Kurt Warner this time, Manu Ginobili. So I don't think about this often, but I'm like, we're talking about these on the podcast. I've had some pretty good run-ins with athletes in foreign cities, or not foreign, but foreign to me cities here. So that seeing Ginobili's face on this card reminded me of that.
Dude, you have some kind of luck with public appearances in spotting famous athletes, man. That's impressive. But yeah, dude, this card, I'm just glad he had his shirt on, man. I'm glad that he was fully dressed. Yeah, that's a step up. So, but no, this card, man, like, there's so much to love about it. One thing I love about this card is Emmanuel Ginobili, right? Like, everybody knows him as Manu, but I love that his rookies and maybe some of his earlier year cards all say Emmanuel, which I love. I don't know why that gets me, but it makes him feel like he was less respected coming in. And then now we know what he actually did, and it's like, okay, this is Manu. But this card is an on-card auto. It's probably his third best rookie auto. Like, he has an SP Authentic auto. The base of that is like out of 1500, but there's a limited that's out of 50, which usually is his highest selling rookie auto. Then this card has a gold parallel out of 99. And then this is the out of 99 base. That's probably his third best rookie auto, but that's like it. And there's four on card rookie autos of Manu Ginobili that I could find. And it's two cards and then they're parallel. So super limited selection. This is a PSA 10. This pop 16, I believe. Auto looks pretty good. But Manu, I mean, he was a stud. Like, I tell people all the time, he's always been my favorite Euro basketball player. Loved him from the jump. And I never liked those Spurs teams. Like, that was back when I didn't appreciate like actual basketball. I wanted like the Ja Morants, right? I didn't want like the like, oh, let's pass the ball around and get the best shot. Like, but I appreciated his savviness. I just felt like he was so crafty with the ball, and like being left-handed, he was different. He came off the bench most of his career and never complained. Like, he had a Hall of Fame career coming off the bench and never complained once. And that's like, you just don't hear of that very often. But one thing I want to touch on, I was just doing a little research and reminded me of 2004. Argentina won the Olympics. He was the MVP of that Olympics. They beat Team USA, which had like Dwayne Wade, Tim Duncan, AI, Stephon Marbury. LeBron was on that team, but he didn't play much that game. I don't remember if he got hurt or something. But Manu had 29 against them, beat them, like dominated them, won the gold that year. He won four NBA championships, like just a decorated career, one of the best Euro players ever, and sweet auto rookie that, you know, there's not many to choose from.
Such a sick player. I'm glad you brought up this card. And we have like a, maybe a, you're starting a theme, a little international theme here of international impact. I don't ever get tired of talking about this next player because his career was so prolific, and he was just, it's kind of like you say, like Manu was a master of his craft as like a six man. Like, if you want to talk about getting able to get a hit, like this guy on this card, I mean, he's a surefire hit every time. So why don't you share what your second card is?
Yeah, so it's the 2002 Topps Chrome Gold Refractor Ichiro PSA 9. This is on PWCC and will end Sunday the 17th, March 17th. But yeah, Ichiro batted 350 his rookie year, which is insane. I saw some stat. It was like he got to 3 out of the 10, his first 10 hits, first 10 like at-bats. And never dropped below 300 from that point on the rest of his career. As bad as that is. Something insane like that. And he's a guy that had like a legendary Japanese career and a legendary MLB career. He played baseball for like 30 years. I mean, it's insane. But this card specifically is the first Topps Chrome Gold Refractor from baseball. The 01 had some, the retrofractor, and like some of those look kind of gold, but it's not actually a gold refractor. This is actually a gold refractor parallel. Not numbered. They were one in every four packs from what I saw. So it's not like they were super limited. But when you look at the pop reports, there's only 67 Ichiros graded between the three big grading companies. So there's not a lot of these are off-centered and stuff. So there's probably a fair amount of ungraded copies. But it's pretty limited card, for especially for not being numbered. The PSA 9 is a pop 29. But there's only three PSA 10s. There's 52 cards graded by PSA. So it's like really hard to find a gem mint copy of this. So the PSA 9 becomes a lot more desirable. It's, you know, I think it's around $500-$600 card. So it's affordable, but it's got the rookie, the Topps All-Star Rookie Cup on there. People love that. Baseball collectors love that. But there's just a ton going for this card and player.
Yeah, he's a guy that ever since I've been digging in a little bit on the baseball stuff, he's a guy that's super fascinating to me just based on career and catalog of cards. So I'm glad you brought this one up. And dude, this guy was pretty good at football and still relevant. So who's your last pick before we get into your cards?
So try to be conscious of the lower value cards and finding some diamonds in the rough there for people, but I almost didn't share this card because I just wanted it for myself. Like, I didn't want to put this out there because I wanted no competition. I won't go for this card now because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to cause any more competition for anybody that like really wants this card in their collection. But it's the 2004 Tony Gonzalez Bowman Chrome Gold Refractor out of 50 PSA 10, pop one, again, auction on PWCC ending March 17th. Tony Gonzalez, dude, I mean, I'm a Chiefs fan, so I'm a little bit of a homer, but this guy is the most receiving yards and most receptions all time for a tight end. He's sixth most receiving yards all time for anybody in the league, third most receptions all time for anybody in the league. So, like, I know we have a little bit of recency bias with Kelce and Gronk, and maybe they are the two best, you know, sort of receiving era tight ends of all time, but I don't think you can have that conversation without mentioning Tony Gonzalez. And this card sold raw for like $75 a year ago. Like, this is probably $200 or less card, which is insane to me that you can buy such an all-time great player, desirable gold card. Like, this is my favorite design of Bowman Chrome 04, gold refractor PSA 10 for a couple hundred bucks.
The thing that stands out to me about this card is just the photo. Dude, it's like he's at Arrowhead. He just caught some sort of pass. Like, it could have been a touchdown. It could have been a first down. But it was some sort of pass. And you can just tell by the way he's standing. And then if you look beyond Gonzalez, the way they've captured the fans in the crowd, like, you can see the line. You can see, like, the measuring crew in the background and everything that goes on an NFL sideline. But then beyond that, you can see the fans. And we all know, like, as football fans, what, like, the pan shots of Arrowhead are. I mean, obviously the Chiefs have been the most relevant team in the NFL for, you know, a while now. So it's weird, man. I, like, looked at this card when you first sent it and I clicked in, and I like the fact that it was a Bowman Chrome, like, 04, that stood out to me just because I'm a Manning collector and that stands out. But, like, if you cut that out and just looked at this card, like, flashed and looked at him in this image real quick, it looks like he could be on the Super Bowl roster this year, you know?
Yeah, it definitely looks like it could have been, you know, from this year. Like, just you could see the fans just look like they're piled on top of each other, like you said. Like, the photo really is unreal. And, I mean, I give credit to PWCC with their pictures. Like, their images, I feel like, are the best in the game, and they really capture the refractors really well. Like, coming from somebody that scanned a million cards myself when I was listing on eBay, like, it's really hard to capture the refractor sort of layers of a card with a scan, and this one just pops out to you.
All right, let's jump in. We got five more cards that you have some intimate knowledge of. Let's start with number one, which we need a leaderboard. As a Manning guy, it sucks, but I think Tom Brady's leading the most mentioned on Auction Talk. He's got to be leading the charge at this point.
Dude, that's a great idea. I'm gonna make a graphic with most mentioned player, and then I'll do a separate graphic of players that we've mentioned that Brett has met in person.
And I think I'm tapped out.
A separate one of players that Brett has met with their shirt off in person. So I got a couple graphic ideas for you. So good. We'll get those going. But yeah, this is the 2009 Bowman Chrome Red Refractor out of 5, Tom Brady PSA 8. Again, this is one of our consignments. Ends Sunday 3/17 on PWCC. But the Bowman Chrome Red Refractor out of 5 is probably my favorite modern football parallel. They only had them from 2006 through 2009. So there's 4 years there of the Bowman Chrome Red out of 5 for football. So, you know, pretty limited run there. So Brady has 20 of these Red Refractor out of 5s across those years. So super hard to find these. It's a pretty significant year of Bowman Chrome, because after this year, they didn't have Bowman Chrome football for 3 or 4 years. It came back in 2014 for like 1 year, and then that was it. I think 13 they had Bowman football, and then they just had like Chrome autograph inserts, but I don't think there was actually a Bowman Chrome football release. So something interesting about this specific set, the 09, but these never surfaced. Like, from 06 to 09, the year of the red out of 5, only 10 Brady's have sold publicly since like 2008, according to Card Ladder. So that's across all 4 years of the release. So super hard to get your hands on these. This is a PSA 8. This year of the 09 only has an 8 and a 9 in the pop report, I believe. I think that's the only two graded. So it's really hard to find these graded copies. So an 8 is like when these come up, I just feel like it's a card you need to grab from all the years. But just something I kind of look at. Like, I try to look at, how does this compare to another similar parallel to another sport? And I look at the 08 Topps Chrome Red Refractor out of 5 from basketball. One of the most desirable parallels in the Topps Chrome era, maybe the most desirable, but outside of the Super Fractors, parallel of the Topps Chrome basketball era, like a LeBron of from that year. Again, it's the chalk toss, so it's an iconic image, but a PSA 8 of that is probably a $50,000-$60,000 card. They did only have 1 year of Topps Chrome Red out of 5, so that probably plays into that, but just something interesting to look at, kind of crossing it over to other sports and what it could compare to. But again, just one of Brady's more rare modern parallels from one of the most desirable brands.
I want to tell you that, like, this card brings me so much pain because I think it was around Christmas time, the Manning PSA 10 version of this card was in someone's story sale, and I literally reached out, and the seller was like, I've got an offer pending, but it's yours if it falls through. And, like, moments later, I knew Drake at Drake's PC.
I remember him posting it.
Beat me. Dude, I had cash ready. I had the cash ready. I was like, no, don't do it to me. But I'm happy for Drake. Just if he ever wants to sell it, which he never will want to sell it. It's just the story of another L I took to him and his amazing Peyton collection.
I remember that card, and I think it was on eBay for a long time, but it was like a pretty pretty high bin, if I remember right. And then he threw it. So I see one on eBay that sold for $8.99 in November. Was that the same card? Was it a different? Did Drake buy it off Instagram?
I think it was an off Instagram sale, but the price sounds about what it was going for.
That's wild, man. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Let's jump to the next one.
Yeah, so this is the 2017 Panini Impeccable Stats Randy Moss Auto out of 23. This is a raw card. So it's an NBA authentic card. I want to touch on the NBA authentic with PWCC real quick. So if you send raw cards into PWCC, they authenticate all raw cards before they will list them on their marketplace. And NBA is the authentication company that they use. They're in-house, so those cards don't go anywhere. They do it right there on site at PWCC. But honestly, like, I feel like this is a slept-on service because you don't have to worry about fake raw cards slipping through the cracks and getting listed. And then Like on eBay, if you buy a fake raw card, you will pay for it. It'll go to authentication. They'll tell you it's fake, and then you'll get your money back. Right? It could be a week. It could be 2 weeks where you're just out of that money and you didn't get the card. This is a service where, like, you're just not going to run into that, right? Because it's already authenticated before it hits the market. You get a cool video with each card that kind of shows the angle, so you can look for condition situations there. If you scroll down, they actually have what they call heat maps lower there. Yeah, so those yellow highlights there on the corners. This is what I love about this service. It's super transparent about the condition of the card. There's on the back of this card, the four corners are kind of lit up yellow, which just shows like there's something going on with these four corners. This is a white bordered card, so it's really hard to see in pictures what the corners look like, right? Because white just all blends in with each other. And it's still kind of hard to see when you zoom in, but at least this is showing you like, hey, just be aware something's going on with these corners. So I appreciate the transparency of that. There's some people that wouldn't want to use that because they don't want people to know the condition because it's going to hurt. It could hurt the value of the card. But if you're somebody that wants people to know the condition of the card and you appreciate that as a buyer, like I just think this service is, it doesn't exist anywhere else. But the card itself, what I love about this card is it calls out Randy Moss's record year with the Patriots, his first year. If you look at the back of the card, it has like a little cool write-up, like talking about him hooking up with Brady, catching 23 touchdown passes, breaking the record and going 16-0. I always think it's cool when the back of the card just kind of like tells a little story. It's the auto is very clean. It's as far as I could find, it's the only card like this that actually pays tribute to his record 23 touchdown year. I just think that's cool. I love cards like this, even if they are post playing days. One thing I want to shout out as a Jerry Rice, nuthead, Jerry Rice is second all time with 22 touchdowns in a season. And he did that in a 12 game year because of the strike. So I just want to call that out. A little slight to you, Randy Moss guys, but no, this season was one of the most memorable seasons of all time. And I just think it's cool when a card can take you right to that moment.
I love yes, that's why I like Finest so much, because a lot of Finest cards call out the moments. Here's something you don't see every day. We this is a first. We're talking about a case of cards.
And soccer cards.
And soccer cards, which has been somewhat of a relevant topic here on this program. What do we got here?
This is the 2020 Topps Chrome UEFA Champions League Soccer Sealed Hobby Case. So what I love about this is I'm not a soccer collector myself either. So one of the best things about my job is getting stuff in that I don't know about and I can research and learn about, but also like my consigners will oftentimes educate me on stuff they send in. And that's what happened with this. He's like, hey, this is why this is important, just so you know. And I love that, because I hear it and I'm not a soccer guy and I'm like, oh, wait, I want to look into this more. I might be interested. But this particular set, 2020, so that was COVID year, right? And you know, from what my consigner told me about that year is, you know, these EuroLeague clubs, they like to develop their young talent over the years. And year to year, they'll usually plug their roster spots with like tenured players and they'll transfer them in and out. But this was a COVID year, so they couldn't do the transferring in and out. So they had to promote younger guys from within earlier than they normally wanted. And it makes this class like stacked with a bunch of rookies, younger guys that are still kind of emerging and kind of hitting their stride now. But what makes it super interesting is the 2026 World Cup is coming up in the United States. A lot of rookies from this class are going to be hitting kind of their, that's going to be their coming out moment, I think, is the 2026 World Cup. So I just think it's an interesting opportunity to kind of make a play on soccer cards. And I think this might be a set to take a swing on. Second year, Haaland cards, you got Mbappe, Messi, like all the vets are in there, but pretty significant set.
Yeah. With soccer cards, just in general, it's, I'm interested in the parallels, no pun intended, between kind of soccer and baseball and just how the different collectors think and just the prospecting side and the time it takes for these guys to hit the field and to, you know, validate kind of their career and stuff. So I think it's super interesting. Obviously, like, I'm a Chrome guy, so if I ever were to dip my toes in soccer cards, it would probably be in with the Chrome product. But yeah, it's crazy that the World Cup is kind of just around the corner. I'm curious that if we're going to see like the parabolic boom with soccer cards again around that time, or if it'll be normal, knowing how the hobbies, I'm sure it'll be wild. So maybe it's an opportunity to get in on some of that stuff before things get crazy.
I think one thing that's interesting is it's on U.S. soil. So that throws a different wrench into the equation, because the U.S. is what's going to take that market from one level to the next, right? It's and the fact that it's on our soil, like, I don't know. I think it could get interesting for sure.
Dude, the next, you have a pair here. And yeah. Just looking at these two guys are synonymous with each other, but I'm just looking at their current bid, the bids on these cards, and it's like kind of tells the story in its way. No slight to one of the players, but maybe it just says how good the other one is. I don't know. But talk about the pairing. This is, I'm getting nostalgic because this reminds me of just me getting back into cards.
Yeah. So these are the 2018 Select Courtside Silver Prism PSA 10s of Luka and Trey. So Brett, if you can't see the screen, the Luka is bid to 3,500 right now, and the Trey is at 23 or 25?
23.
That's $23, not 2,300. So like Brett said, that kind of paints the story of where the hobby is in regard to these two players, which is super interesting. But like, this is more about the Select product and how great it used to be. I mean, like 2018 Select, like these silvers, I think there's like around 40 PSA 10s of each of these guys. There's like 50 to 60 in the pop report, so they're pretty limited. But I did some research on Select basketball, and it introduced like the levels in 2014, like the concourse, the premier, and the courtside levels. They had 13 parallels in 2014 across all three levels total. In 2015, there was 17. In 2016, there was 18. So from 2016 through 2018, it didn't move from 18 parallels. Three straight years, they did not increase the number of parallels. Then in 2019, it went from 18 to 30 parallels. And it went from hobby exclusive to retail. By 2022, there was 50 different parallels. And I think they added a level or two. Like, I just stopped following the product. It's just, it used to be my favorite release, and now I don't touch it. And it pains me to say that, because the courtside silvers are actually still pretty limited. Like, I looked at the Cade Cunningham. There's 15 PSA 10 Cade Cunninghams. There's only 36 total in the pop report. But there's 50 different parallels from the release, and it's retail only. So the product is so washed now. The value's like what could be a cool car just isn't as desirable anymore because of the changes they made to the product. And it's a shame, man. Like I wish they could make Select great again.
Make Select
MSGA, great. Man.
Yeah. So I will say this just as a, I feel similar thoughts to you about Select. I will say this, that I'm still holding out. Maybe it's because I'm a Halliburton collector, and maybe it's because I have a Halliburton gold court side. I think the court sides are still like, I protect the court sides. I think they're still badass cards. But yeah, it doesn't make me feel any better that these cards went to retail and that they're adding levels on top of levels. Like the football product at this point is just absurd. So
it's sad, man. I do think the golds, like the original gold parallels, like the court sides and the base or the concourse in the Premier, like, true golds, I think those are going to matter for sure. But it's, you know, the silver is what gets hit when you add a bunch of other parallels that are quote unquote just as rare.
No doubt. So we're talking this last one. We've got a golf card, which I know timely with the Masters ahead, and we've got LIV Golf getting Prism treatment. So golf cards are in the picture. This one looks pretty cool. What are we talking about here, Nick?
This is the 2021 SP Game Used gold out of 25. Tiger, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Justin Thomas, quad. They call it the tour gear. We'll call it quad patch because people will understand patch. All event use or event worn memorabilia on this card. Golf cards are interesting to me. I feel like they have the best worn memorabilia cards in existence. I mean, like there's like gloves, there's shirts, there's hats, there's ball marks. Like they do a really good job of the event used stuff and including it into cards. And the releases are limited. There's just not a lot of golf products. So I feel like the releases are a little bit more impactful and meaningful and significant because there's not 25 different release products from golf. And these are all names like everybody knows Tiger, everybody knows Jack Nicklaus, everybody knows Arnold Palmer. Most people know Justin Thomas. Maybe he's not the most recognized person, especially not on this card. But, you know, this is under $1,000 card. I think as people, it's intriguing. Golf cards are intriguing to me because I feel like this space is dominated by men. There's a lot of incredible women collectors in this space, but the majority of people in this space are men, and they're our age. A lot of them are our age, right? We're mid-30s, mid-40s, in between. Like, we could play golf for 30 more years, man. We're not playing much more basketball. We're not playing much more football, right? So I think it's a sport that all of us have a higher probability of becoming interested in ourselves, which could lead to becoming more interested in golf cards. I don't know. Just a theory I have that I think there's potential in golf cards. And having such a recognizable athlete as Tiger, like he's a globally recognized athlete, not just a globally recognized golfer. I think that helps the golf card space as well.
Yeah, I think golf cards are definitely gaining more traction and they're part of the conversation. We're talking about it here. So I think it's like WrestleMania with wrestling cards. It's Masters with golf cards. These tentpole events definitely bring out cool cards and conversations. Nick, this is the, we went Broadway and then some, longest conversation in the can. Hopefully you're enjoying the long form content. I'm enjoying having these conversations. You can check them out at the Wharf Sports Cards. Nick, appreciate another one. We'll be back doing this again in a flash. We got kids, man. Life just zooms by. We'll be here before you know it next Monday.
I can't wait, man.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Have a good week.
Always enjoy syncing up with my man Nick. We covered a lot of ground. Go check out his newsletter, No Recent Comps. He's got a lot of good stuff going on. If you're looking for someone for consignment, hit him up. Always enjoy his service. You take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. More Stacking Slabs on the other side.